You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges.
The Education Design Lab is a national nonprofit that co-designs, prototypes, and tests education and workforce models. Kathleen Delasky is the founder and CEO of the lab. Kathleen, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You know, this is a conversation that we've had quite a bit with you and others, that we're in the midst of this huge shift in thinking about how we prepare and educate our workforce, one that is even more focused now on skills than ever before. So in your new report, Skills Visibility, you discuss that what you are calling a reset in the relationship between three key stakeholders in this new economy that we're basically living in and that we're going to be living in for a while. Let's start with a definition. What are those three key stakeholders?
We believe that the learner, of course, is at the center. And we actually have tried to socialize a new term, which doesn't really work when you say it. It's better on paper, but it's the idea of merging the learner and the earner. Because if you're designing a new skills ecosystem, you have to recognize that 75% of students past high school are working. And that, you know, more and more, it's about reskilling and shifting to the career, to the jobs and the careers, and building the skills that you need as you go through your life and your career. The first key stakeholder is the learner and the earner. So we're putting them together as one stakeholder. And then the other two are employers, of course, who are doing the hiring. So they're on the other side of this two-sided transaction, right, of hiring. And then the learning institutions are the third key stakeholder, because they're the ones that are supposed to be and have traditionally been preparing learners to become earners. And that's all, you know, it's all merging into one set of challenges and tasks now.
Let's talk about the learner first, because as you said, all these people are working and they're trying to learn as well. And one of the numbers that we use all the time is really only one in three people in the country, adults in the country, actually have a bachelor's degree. So most of the people are learning on the job, or they're learning with a certification or a community college. How much of a shift do you see going on with that right now?
The enrollment in, let's take community colleges, which are training the 60% of people who don't have degrees, and probably another half of the people who start out in community college who do get degrees. So that's, you know, that's a vast majority of all people are using a community college model. Their enrollment over the past decade has been down, you know, altogether, it's, you know, 15 to 20% in some cities and regions. It accelerated a lot during COVID. So you see people walking away from the traditional degree model, at least the people who are starting it from community college, which, you know, is the what we call new majority learners and earners, who are the groups that we're serving. You know, what does that signal? I mean, it signals that consumers and people are looking for shorter term programs, shorter term paths to not just to a job, but to a career. And that accelerated a lot during COVID too. The mismatch right now, as we move, you know, to this second curve of a skill, what we would call a skills-based economy, is that we haven't like figured out how to serve the new needs of the majority of the population with the kind of skill building and skill mastery, and then demonstration of those skills that we need to get to.
We've seen that shift, that change on what maybe the learners want is changing what the learning institutions. So that second part of the triangle there. So It is changing the way they have to be competitive. What are you seeing in that space? Are you seeing more programs started, or are you just seeing them evolve?
Yes, I think colleges of every stripe are being way more responsive to producing job-ready graduates. They're struggling a little bit more in creating the stackable credentials that might allow you to have a short-term credential of high value that can get you a job, that then, let's say you're in that job and you might be earning another short-term credential to move up the ladder. And that's part of what the skills visibility paper is talking about, is how do we help learners visualize all the possibilities in the context of degrees, maybe, but not if that's what they think they don't need or want. And you know, how do you stack like Lego, interlocking Lego blocks, the pieces of a career training trajectory that can shift and turn and be agile if, you know, you hit a pandemic and you say, I don't want to be in hospitality anymore, or whatever, you know, whatever happens, that you can see the possibilities. That's one side of it. And more importantly, that you can capture the value of all of your skills, not just the degrees that you've finished, because that is only 40% of people. And the other 60% have fabulous assets often that they've learned on the job, or you know, from taking care of an elderly parent as a home health aide, but not having a certificate for it. How do we offer, how do colleges offer, and they're beginning to grapple with this, it's really exciting. How do we assess all of the learning that people are doing, not just the learning that they're doing in the old fashioned classroom?
Well, and that comes to the third part, and then we can get in a little deeper, but the employers. So they are now, I see such a trend where through like Guild and others, where they're offering this training to the employees to try to build on those skills they have and to make sure those skills that they don't have, they have an option to get them, a way to get them. So I'm sure you're seeing the exact same thing.
Yes, the employer piece has been exciting because they've been sort of the last of these three key stakeholders to come to the party, partly because their hiring systems, particularly the larger employers, are not set up in skills-based form, right? So they have to rethink job descriptions, right, to shape them in skill clusters. Like, what are the actual skills that we're asking for? Because they have to send signals both to the training providers and the learners about, okay, what are the job functions that we actually need for this role? And job descriptions have not really been organized that way to date. And that shift is beginning to happen. That's one piece that we really see happen. And then another is that employers are starting to say, okay, we cannot hire enough people if we require degrees. And so we have to look at what they're calling multiple pathways. In fact, we're helping the Business Roundtable with this work with Fortune 500s. We're working with several other groups that are employer groups that are asking, okay, how do we remove our degree requirements? What, you know, what's the chain of events that needs to happen? And if you just saw, was it last week, Maryland, which is my next door state, just announced that they were going to remove college degree requirements from state jobs. President Trump in the last administration did that as well through an executive order, and that, you know, began to do some work in that. So you see it happening at the government level as well.
So the title of the report is Skills Visibility. So again, all those three, you know, how do you make your skills visible? How do your employers signal that these are the skills they want? And how does a college capture that? So that it feels like kind of the bucket that we're talking about here. Do you see anybody doing it well? Do you see any organization or institution or business doing this well?
That's a really good question. And what we see are emerging pieces of different parts of the ecosystem. And in the paper, we actually name maybe 10 to 15 groups. We have sections throughout the paper called Skills Visibility in Action, where we name the work of early groups that are starting to make all this happen. And what's interesting is that for about 5 years, a lot of the players have been building the infrastructure for what we call the skills-based hiring ecosystem. And they're working on the technologies, they're working on the standards that your digital skills would be represented in so that it can be a currency across the land. And there are these learner wallet pilots that are about to come out. The Indiana Learner Wallet Project is probably the most well-known, where the whole community college system of Indiana is working on it. And there are a number of other groups that are coming out with learner wallet pilots. And we're calling these in the paper, the human trials are about to begin, right? We've been working on the infrastructure and the technology for about 5 years. And now we're going to see how this lives in the wild. Like, when will learners show up? Will employers use the system? Because if they do, we have the potential to have a much more equitable hiring and talent ecosystem, because visibility is the magic piece of the puzzle. And if we get it right, we will have a much more equitable system that can begin to you know, mitigate the wage and wealth gap for minorities and new majority learners in this country. If we get it wrong, and this is sort of why we put the paper out now, we recommend design criteria for how the system can be most equitable. Because if we get it wrong, we could just recreate a lot of the biases in the old analog hiring system, which we believe is exclusive, it's high stakes, and it's broken.
Talking about the learner wallet, I mean, I've talked to a couple of different people about there are so many credentials out there signaling, you know, what skills you may or may not have, and how do you know how to value them? So it feels like, is there going to be a one standard? You know, is a learner wallet going to include credentials, and who's going to judge them?
Yeah, that's one of the things we talk about in the paper, that the validation piece needs to be universal. So if we're saying that, you know, the first stage of this new talent ecosystem, which we're calling a virtuous circle, by the way, is to connect all of your learner experiences, to give you access to those, that the second piece would be a much more robust validation process that does have universal signal value, so that the if you're getting your skills validated, that you know, were a home healthcare aide helping out your elderly parent, that the Home Healthcare Aide, you know, Association of America is, you know, teamed up to say, you know, here's what the assessment looks like, whether you went through, you know, a formal training or not. You know, for example, the third piece is how does it display in your wallet? Can you get learners? It's going to be on our phones, apparently, and we're going to be able to access our skills and cluster them in ways that we can see from, you know, the apps that will be available, that certain types of employers are looking for this cluster or that cluster or this configuration, and we'll be able to learn how close of a match we are for those roles. And we can turn on our discoverability mode and apply for jobs, which is a huge inclusive change from a closed system now, where, you know, you have to know people really to get past the applicant tracking systems, right? So those are some of the possibilities and the promise of the skills-based ecosystem if we get it right. To your question about, okay, there's a million credentials out there right now, how do we make sense of them? One of the calls to action, we have a series of calls to action, is to ask states to take a lead role here and to adopt credential assessments and standards across states. In other words, not just to pick and choose and reinvent the wheel each time a state is deciding what is a credential of value in the state. Can we create consistency across competency frameworks, as they're called?
There is a massive digital divide in the country still, though. There's people that don't have the broadband access. They don't have the digital skills, and they may not have the tools, a laptop. So are you worried at all that something like this wallet might be still creating a big divide?
Yes, of course. And you know, as we always say in these cases, that's not a reason not to do it, but it's a reason to have intentionality and funding, and, you know, groups identified that provide the wraparound services for the folks left behind from the digital divide. I mean, I think of groups that we've worked with on the ground, such as Goodwill Services, other job centers, where their part of their role is to have coaches. And one of the design criteria that we have is that advising, it needs to follow the learner or the earner through the system. In other words, we disintermediate college, right? If we say we no longer are expecting people to go to one education institution, and therefore advising lives there, and that organization is responsible for helping them get hired. Right now, you're getting your learning experiences from all over the place, right? So what happens to advising? And I think for this population, we're particularly concerned. You know, we have to design in ways that we have this concept called ed guides, which is, you know, it's sort of like it would be paid for by financial aid, right? Where you're getting the support from the human touch from a coach that is helping you navigate this system, because it won't be harder than the old system, but it will have challenges.
Where are we at in this process? How much time do you think we're going to take to get there?
How much time are we going to take to get there? I keep asking that because these human trials, as we've described them, where we're going to have some of the first learner wallet pilots, that's where we're actually going to see your learning data, you know, coming into your wallet. and we're going to learn what do learners do with it? Is it empowering? Does it help them both see the possibilities for their future? Does it help them organize their skills and understand, you know, their possibilities in terms of career paths? Does it help them get hired? I mean, these are the sorts of things that I think those trials will probably last for the next 2 to 3 years, as many of the entrepreneurs in the space are building out some of the supports. I mean, you have groups like LinkedIn, and you have organizations, you know, there's a group called Smart Resume, for example, that's working on what are the resume features that you'd want to offer people who have access to their skills wallet. You also have groups that are just helping to track all the data. So all of the, I would say that the innovation on the for-profit side and the nonprofit side will really, you'll really see that kick in this year through 2025, 2026. And you probably won't see anything that looks like this imagined future state that I'm describing to you until the second half of this decade. But you'll start to see the beginning of it by the end of this year.
As the lab has been working over these last couple of years, are there any innovations that you have seen that you feel like have changed the lives of learners now? I always love to champion good programs.
So learning providers are a key stakeholder group, and they're actually moving the fastest. And it's partly because their current model is in trouble, right? They recognize that they have to evolve in order to survive. And so one of the things that they're really beginning to do is to design flexible short-term pathways. And learners are responding because they're much more intentional than the original kind of work-based learning programs that happened, you know, in the last century. I'm very excited about that because learners are responding to them. We are operating a program called the Community College Growth Engine Fund with 22 of the leading community colleges who are testing this model. It's called Micro Pathways. And it's the idea that you design with employers specific micro pathways that are based on high demand roles that lead to livable wage. And we've designed 30 of these pathways just in the last year with these 22 community colleges. And that's one of the key calls to action from the paper, is that learning providers need to design flexible competency-based pathways that are responsive to employers and what learners are asking. And so I'm excited that piece is moving ahead, and we're adding more colleges every day and more employers who want to work on pathways. So that feels like an early area of progress in this trajectory. So I wanted to point that out. And the other is a body of work that a lot of partners are doing. And we mentioned this in the paper, called X Credit. That's short for experience credit. That is really an attempt, and one of the first attempts, because it's hard. So people, you know, the commercial providers haven't tried to really do this. But how do you capture and credential non-school-based learning in a way that employers are willing to validate, right? To say, we will count this experience that you have instead of, you know, 3 or 4 years of college. And so, you know, we're working with employers, and we're working with actually the military. Walmart.org is funding this work, XCredit, which is looking at what kind of assessments can stand in for a degree when an employer wants to see a verifiable, validated skill. That work is in its second year, just starting its second year, and showing a lot of early promise.
I love what you're doing, and it's changing the way people are, you know, finding a career path. What inspired you to found the company?
Well, we don't think of it as a company because it's a nonprofit, and we think of it as an innovation engine that is really trying to be a bit of a boundary spanner between and among these stakeholders that we talk about, you know, particularly learning providers, employers, states, regions, but with always coming through the lens of the needs of the learner and the changing learner. And really the changing learner that we're focused on is the equity focus. What inspired us to found the organization, I think, really was an understanding that we were hitting a transition moment when the learner would have the opportunity to be empowered, because this was 2013. We saw this sector start to get disrupted, but mainly by, you know, investment bankers and venture capital. And we wanted to build a voice among innovators, what we call entrepreneurs, like inside of institutions and inside of systems and states and regions. We wanted to build muscle and voice to try to create innovation from within, as opposed to being disrupted from, you know, whatever the Uber was going to be of higher education.
Well, I applaud all the work you're doing. So thank you very much. And thanks for sharing your new report with us.
Well, thank you for having me on, and look forward to seeing you next week.
My guest today has been Kathleen Dolasky, CEO and founder of Education Design Lab. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, editor-in-chief of Working Nation.